Hello again from Holden Village. Today is August 6th, 1996, and in the Fireside Room this evening, a forum is taking place entitled Discerning God's Call. Let's tune in and hear what's being said.
In a lot of courses this summer, I'm serving as one of the coordinators of the summer program. One of the tasks that comes with that is to organize and moderate these forums, which are a long-standing Holden tradition that's in constant evolution. The idea that at Holden there would be conversation and that we would learn from one another is a constant. The precise ways we do that changes each week and each day. But one of the things that's constant about the forum is that we come with the hope of leaving wiser because of what we have heard from one another. It may be from someone else's experience or expertise. It may be from someone else's questions and struggles that we deepen our own understanding and our sense of how it is best to live in this world. Because that's our goal, we ask that each person be listened to carefully and respectfully. We don't mean that we shouldn't disagree, but only that we should disagree in a spirit of love and respect. We go for an hour because we realize that many of the kinds of questions and experiences that bring us together for forums are ones that are not resolved in an hour or 3 hours or 6 hours. And so it's better to stop after an hour, acknowledging that we won't have everything resolved. But my hope, one of my hopes is always that when you come to a forum, you will hear someone say something that you want to follow up on, that you'll want to seek that person out at coffee break or for a walk or sitting on the ark and pursue what you've heard from them. My role here is primarily to give people the floor and occasionally to stop and try and summarize or give a little direction. The four people who are sitting here come to get us started. My favorite analogy for this is that they are the pump primers, and we hope that after they speak, the water of conversation continues to gush forth. It's not up to you.
No.
You're certainly welcome to ask them questions, but not to regard them as the ones who know all the answers. Tonight's topic grows out of our summer theme, Water Washed and Spirit Born. It's been an extremely generative topic, I think. It's helped us to think about many aspects of our life as Christian people. Early in the summer, Dan Erlander helped us realize that our baptism makes us odd. And also talked about living an immersed life. Well, those are catchy phrases, but it's sometimes hard to know exactly what it means to be odd and immersed in the way we live. And so the water part, I think, is easy for us. We can understand more deeply, but by and large, we at least get the main stuff about what baptism is. It's harder for us, perhaps because it's even more against the currents of the society around us, to think about what it would mean to live with the Spirit carrying us. The phrase water washed and spirit born comes from a Ruth Duck hymn, and we added that little E. She had water washed and spirit born, as in having been given birth. And we added that E in the hope that there would be a dynamic of movement, some sense of vocation and calling. Many people come to Holden with ears tuned to hear God's calling. What's next? What's now? What kind of life is God asking me to lead? And so we're often in processes of discernment while we're here. Four people have agreed to start by talking to us about that in their own lives. Each of them quickly said, well, I'm in this sort of speechlessness that suggested they don't think they've arrived. And it may be that that's one of the commonalities that we all feel about vocation, that we haven't arrived. I'm going to ask each of you to introduce yourself and then speak just a few minutes about this process of discerning and hearing God's call. And I think we'll go in this order: Bill, Mark, Pam, Julie. So, Bill.
Thank you. I'm Bill Strello, and I serve the church as a pastor in Chicago on the northwest side. And it's a white working class congregation. And I'm going to take a little off ramp first. I've been thinking a lot about the last baptism that I officiated at. I think every baptism is superseded by the next one, but this one in particular, three children all related to one another as brothers and her sister, and during the pre-baptismal instruction and conversation with the children and the parents, the one girl is six. We just talked about, well, what's baptism? And I mean, well, baptism is taking a bath with Jesus. And they, well, it's okay. So the day of the baptism, during the children's sermon, we had the kids come up, and I said to Katrina, I said, you see the water? Oh, yeah. Well, who do you see in the water? She said, I see Jesus. And I damn near fell over. It's kind of something that you would hope would happen. And so the conversation of seeing Jesus took an extension when she got home. Is that, you know, what does it mean to see Jesus? And so that became the theme then of the sermon the next Sunday, is that if Katrina, age six, can see Jesus in the water, then it's the responsibility of this pastor and this congregation to be sure that Katrina, as she grows in years, will see Jesus, as Jack was saying tonight, in her enemies. And that's kind of become a baptismal theme for our congregation for the last almost 2 months now, to see Jesus in the water, and then this grow in your life, to see Jesus and the God to whom Jesus points in every other person and every other thing that we might see. But to get to the concern that we have on calling and discerning, I'm 54, and on the early morning of my 50th birthday, I awoke with somewhat of a start and startled a feeling, saying, my God, this is it. And you know, your most of your life is before you, and hopefully a great many years of my life is ahead of me. And I wanted to get my bearings, which is a water image for me. You know, what are my bearings on the sea, and the drift of life. So I've always, since that moment, 4 years ago, I've thought of that. And I think what brought Deanne to me today to ask to share some of this was a comment I made yesterday, is that sometimes discernment takes place and recognition of a calling takes place years after you've done something. And when I was 22 in 1964, I decided I was going to be the proverbial prodigal son and leave Chicago to go to San Francisco, which my father sternly warned me against for all sorts of reasons. And I was to go to San Francisco for a weekend, and I ended up staying for 14 years. I quit my job by a telegram, because I knew that if I went back to say I'm going to leave, my mother would say, oh, now you've got to stay. And I just knew my mother and my relationship would only have been broken by be doing what I did. And so I stayed for 14 years, and in that 14 years experienced life and humanity and varieties of and disparities of people in ways that I had not even imagined growing up on the northwest side of Chicago in a white working class family where my father was a union man but voted Republican. It never made any sense to me. Went to seminary, became somewhat intimate with the church and its many, many manifestations. And then a few years ago, because of my wife's vocation and calling, ended up back in Chicago. And last year was invited to go to the 75th anniversary of the congregation in which I grew up. And I thought, this would be fun. I will do this. And I was also invited to give the invocation, which was a pleasant surprise. I didn't expect it, and I said, I will do this. So rather than just pray a prayer, I gave a mini sermon of maybe a minute. But I came away from that experience realizing that if I had stayed in that particular manifestation of the church in 1964, that I would have been a dead person. Either physically dead or certainly spiritually dead, because the people that I reacquainted myself with after 32 years hadn't moved in any way, shape, or form. The fellow who was the master of ceremonies told the same jokes that he told 32 years ago. And I just began to realize how fortunate I was to have moved from that particular manifestation of the church, and it really is a manifestation. And while we were at the dinner table, this young woman whose name was Kathy, who's now Catherine, came up to me, and with my wife standing beside me and the bishop seated below me, eating his dinner, said, I want you to know that Bill is the first man I ever slapped. And what she was referring to was a play that we were in, and called for her to slap me. But I just, since that time, last April, recognized how fortunate that I was, and I discerned that this move in 1964, when I was 22 years old, to a place that my father had warned me about, where all his enemies were, and which he tried to make my enemies, was not true. And that I had been pulled away from a very, very isolated environment, an environment that told me lies about what it might be to be a man and a white person and a straight person. And so for the last 32 years, I realized how fortunate, and I began to discern and get my bearings about how good it was of God to pull me away from a place where I was welcomed, because the pastor had always said, the doors are always open. But then to go back 32 years later and say, good God, if I had stayed here, I would have been dead. But I am alive, and you know, you can pick out any hymn, Amazing Grace, whatever it was, just to show that sometimes one's recognition of one's calling, one's being pulled by the Spirit, it takes time. And for me, that was the case.
I'm Mark Schmidt. I'm the operations manager here at Holden Village. Been here about a year and a half. We'll be here for a while still to come. And my background, my whole experience is not maybe in the context of a congregation, or I can't key it around a specific event, but I was on the corporate fast track. I graduated with an electrical engineering degree from Columbia University in New York City, hired on with a major telecommunications firm, and spent 7 years in a variety of different engineering project management assignments, moving around the country, doing all the right things, meeting all the right people, hobnobbing at the right times, on a fast track to a big corporate assignment down in Dallas, and that was to be my next stop, Dallas, Texas, for a few years, where all the big politics were played. And towards the end of that 7 years that I was with that company, it came very clear to me, if nothing else, I was cheating myself out of a lot of life. I had routinely worked 80 to 100 hour work weeks, received a lot of praise for what I did, was getting a lot of awards, was making tremendous money, but was also cheating myself out of a lot of life. And I think of myself as somewhat thick-headed sometimes, because I think it took me about 7 or 8 months to realize it, that I just was hearing something within myself, and a lot of this comes to me through my gut. And maybe like you said, Bill, a year and a half later, it's easy to look back and say, oh, yeah, it was coming through right here. But it took me 6 or 7 months, I think, to kind of listen to that calling and just feel that some things were really wrong, and then I needed to look around and listen. And now that I've, there were many things that drew me here to Holden Village. That's one of those, was kind of getting out of that context. And I really wanted to be somewhere where I would not just kind of escape from my own tendency to work too hard or to overachieve or to want this or that or the other thing, but to try to focus that into something that I really could believe in and not just contribute to shareholder return, but really feel that I was putting my talents to work for the greater good. One of the things I really struggled with in some of my engineering training was I grew up in a family of clergy and counselors and teachers, and they were all of my family never put any pressure upon me to consider any other vocation than the one that I did. But I assumed some of that upon myself, and assuming that, you know, ministers are doing wonderful things for people and teachers are doing wonderful things for people. Just look, and counselors, see what they do. And I was an engineer, you know, gearhead, working on circuits, you know, what do electrons do anyway? And it's been a real growing process for me to understand that it's okay to use my God-given talents, even if I am a techno head, as long as I can believe in what I'm doing and really feel that it's towards a worthy cause. So probably like everyone here, I don't really know where I'm going, but I do feel deeply that at least in this place that I can contribute, again, some of those God-given talents towards keeping this funny little town going. And even in little funny little things, I at least feel that, you know, you can kind of feel the spirit around, and you see the spirit working in other people, and feel little moments of discovery within myself. And every once in a while, they get through my thick head. And but it's that piece of deeply, deeply believing in what you're doing, and kind of seeing the spirit at work around you. And even if it's just tying wires together in the hike house, or, you know, the little thing, driving the bus up and down the road, or the little things that we do every day, to be a part of making this piece work. And, you know, even in a year and a half now, I can already begin to look back and see how this amazing community works, you know, that I start to feel my calling. And so looking forward, then the game is, you know, realizing that the rest of the world isn't Holden Village, nor could I live at Holden Village forever, but how can you take a little piece of that, even apply a little piece of your God-given talents, again, towards something that you can deeply believe in, something that you can kind of feel works, and, you know, and feel God working among you and among other people, and not get back into that trap of, you know, bigger paycheck every year if it's just contributing to shareholder return and $4 million CEO salaries. So
yeah, hi, my name is Pam. I responded to Deanne's request wholeheartedly, yes, and then ran off and read a book, like the entire book, hoping to get some idea what to say. It didn't help, but I do have some thoughts. The book that I read actually was the book that the ELCA sends to prospective ministers called Who Will Go For Us by Daniel Campbell, I think. I have been on a long, long path of saying later to a call that I have felt since I was 13 years old to go to seminary. Initially, I think that call came in my gut because of the fact that that was all I knew of life. I mean, I do think I was so steeped in the culture with a father as a pastor that I couldn't quite picture myself doing anything else. And so that initial sense of call was probably more, let me just get Dad's attention and be like him so that, you know, we can be colleagues and we can talk. And so there was that sort of almost neurotic sense to that first part of it. But I kind of wrestled with it during high school and through college. But by the time I was 1 year into college, I had married, which is another whole part of my life I won't get into, and spent the last 3 years married and wanted to start a family and wasn't able somehow to see the compatibility of those two callings. And so I went ahead fairly soon after that with the family, and the kids are now 6 and 8, almost 8. And their dad and I have split up in the meantime 2 years ago. But I went on that path because I didn't see how I could do both the seminary and the kids. And I thought, well, later, God, later, I'll raise the kids. And of course, I thought I wanted to do that like Mom did by staying home, and I discovered that wasn't me either, somewhere along 4 or 5 years into it. But I'll raise the kids till they're a certain age, till I feel like I have a little bit of time, and then I'll go ahead and sure, I'll do that then, you know. But in the meantime, I've always done a lot of work around the church. As a pastor's kid, I did just about every job imaginable, whether I was gifted in it or not, whether I wanted to do it or not. The things that I enjoyed the most were, in fact, going on pastoral calls with my dad to the hospital and leading worship and preaching and reading lessons and some of the music things that I did. So I began to get a sense of the fact that I enjoyed that, and I was also very validated in that by the community, especially as I got into college and beyond. People were constantly asking me whether I was considering going into the ministry, and I would always give the same answer, well, yeah, probably someday. But I just really never made that move. I got really close a couple of times to the point of actually attending vocations days. I mean, actually stepping onto the campus when there was a day for those of us that were considering the ministry and being there. But something always has held me back, and there are many reasons, I think, that I've been held back from that particular part of my calling, one of which is just plain fear. I mean, I had seen, in being a pastor's kid, I had seen all the downs. I had seen a lot of positive things, but I had seen all the negative sides of being a pastor, particularly as it relates to family life and having time for that. And I wasn't any too thrilled about the idea of putting my own children through what had been a fairly challenging part of my childhood, you know, just having my dad gone so much of the time. So there was that. There was the fear of all the difficulties involved. But anyway, along the road here, there have been many times when I have said later, and there were even a couple of times when I decided, no, that, you know, that maybe that only all it was that neurotic stuff. Like, maybe that's all that really was, and it's now kind of faded away, and I've kind of set myself up in this education world with my math degree that I did in college and teaching high school math at the moment.
It was for my idea.
Thank you. I don't know, I didn't know I was going to be talking while I did this. So, if everybody can hold on my story and move on to Julie while I eat this, before I do that? Is that too weird? Okay. I didn't know it was going to take her quite that long to get here. Thank you. Sorry.
Oh no, it's okay.
Sorry. You know, some things are more important than calling.
I'm Julie Slend, and I serve the village here as worship assistant and resident musician for the summer. I'm also the backup nurse, so you've seen me around, running around with keys and helping people. When Dan initially asked me, I too said, sure, you know, I can do that. I feel called. And then I immediately thought, oh no, what did I get myself into? And didn't know what I was going to say. And in talking with some friends, and it sort of hit me. I felt the Spirit very subtly in my life. I equate it with that of a pilot light on a stove. I don't know if you have gone into the kitchen, but if you see the gas range, they have all these little pilot lights underneath the burners. And at a very young age, I felt the call to serve. I began accompanying it when I was 12, played the piano for choirs and in church. And I began to find a joy in leading worship and in doing that. But it was always a hobby. It was something that it was my fun. It was my joy. And I didn't really perceive that as a call. It wasn't an occupation. And so I went to college and became a nurse. And I really felt called. I do feel called to that. I have a great passion for caring for people and seeing the need and trying to fill the need that they have. And I realized since then that precedes every part of my life. If I have a friend in need, I try to find out, you know, what can I do to help them meet the need. In the village here, I've sort of tried to do that here as assisting in the registration office occasionally, or helping out at the snack bar, scoop ice cream, or provide my services as nurse as well as assist with music. And in looking back at the major decisions in my life, going to college, moving to Minnesota to be an intensive care nurse, going back to graduate school to get my master's in nursing, those are the times when I really felt God turned the fire up underneath me. The pilot light became a flame and started cooking, and I felt warm. And I knew that my decisions were right because of that, because I felt the warmth and the comfort that warmth brings, and the support of the Spirit. In my decision to come here for the summer, I took off from my job, and the opportunity was laid open for me to come here for 3 months. And the opportunity presented itself a month ago to consider staying for the year, to consider being the nurse, which they didn't have for the winter, and to be the musician, which they don't have for the winter. And boy, was that tempting. That sits right in where I feel God has given me my greatest gifts. But that warmth of the Spirit wasn't there. A little kind of pit of my stomach, there was a little hole there. And I thought, you know, that's really funny. There's this need, and I can fill it. And I finally came to the realization that I was responding to the need of the village, but God wants me also to respond to the needs for myself. And that the Spirit not only calls you to serve others, but also calls you to serve yourself so that you can be better able to serve others. So I've chosen not to apply to stay for the year, although I dearly love the people here and would love to stay. But for me, the Spirit is very subtle, and I have to listen very carefully. But it's sort of a quiet thing in both my occupation and my avocation that the Spirit has led me to do what I do.
I really like that pilot light analogy. That is so cool. Okay. I'm not done. But...
Sorry, I wasn't too
long. I know, you just didn't talk long.
Do you want us to eat it for you?
Well, you can eat it for... No, you can ask some of the others questions or something like
well,
that.
Well, I was just going to say we could turn to let other people have a chance to talk, and
right.
Pam will want to chime in. There are a lot of commonalities that emerge from these four people talking about how we discern the Spirit's calling, and let me just read off this list that I've been compiling. One has to do with the coincidence of our talents and opportunities. Mm-hmm. That there are things where equipped to do, and then we have the opportunity to do them. I'm thinking of that grammar lesson we were all given, the difference between may and can. But there are really two parts of that can. One is having the resources, and the second is having the occasion to use those. Another is, although in different ways, the importance of family often in helping us to hear. Another is this coincidence of goals that Mark talked about very explicitly, but others alluded to, that calling takes us beyond ourselves. It's the theological notion of vocation is that we're called from outside. Now, it's something that we may hear internally, but the voice of God is outside ourselves. It also takes us out beyond ourselves into community, and that one of the signs of being called is that coincidence between one's own talents and opportunities and those of the people one is with. The importance of points of decision, although none of us here heard those burning bush stories of now it's clear, nonetheless a point of decision is a point of clarity. This retrospective stuff that several of you talked about, looking back, there's clarity. In the midst, there may not be. And I think, although Julie articulated it most clearly, others suggest that a kind of joy in what one does, not necessarily as one's employment, but in all parts of one's life, is a good sign. So having made that list, I suggest you could respond to the list and say, oh no, or you need to add something, or if you'd like to share stories of your own discernment process or questions that you face in discernment, let's turn to hear from the rest as well as these who have launched us.
May I add one little thing to finish the story? Because I really did have kind of a point I was getting to, and now this isn't going to drift as much. Mm-hmm. Thank you for indulging. The one thing that I think has kept me away, other than fear, has been a mistaken idea that I needed to know before I began why I was going or what I was going to do after I was done. And I had, I've had that notion up until just sometime this last week, when I suddenly realized that there is no way from the outside looking in that I will ever know what it is for me to do within the theological community or within that kind of education or with that education. And that the path, any path really, that the path only becomes clear once you step onto it, and even then only one step at a time. So that was the one thing I really wanted to get out.
Thanks.
Well, my story is a little bit of Mark's and a little bit of Julie's, I think, in that I was in corporate America. I was spending a lot of time on the road. I was meeting fascinating people and doing good work. Not making quite as much money, but I have the wrong chromosome set for that. What I found is that I was giving up a lot of life. And my grandmother lived to 93. And the idea of being 93 years old and reflecting back on my life and seeing a lot of hotel rooms and a big checking account was just not as appealing as a life that was actually lived. But it took a long time to get out because I bought a house thinking that I wanted to be a mom, and I needed to have a house to do that. You need to have a job that paid a lot of money, pay for daycare. And so it wasn't until I was absolutely beaten over the head with how this was not working out and it wasn't going to work out that the whole newsletter came, and it had long-term positions available. And the idea went off that this is a place that has always been clear. So I'd only been here as a guest, and I'd only been here in the wintertime. So it was very easy to say, hold it, it's clarity. And so I applied, and that started a steamroll that didn't stop until I got off the bus in the middle of summer at Holton. The seminary idea that I had when I was in college and had discounted because it wasn't right, came back, and I found out about the steps, and I reconnected with a pastor from 10 years ago because he's now the chairman of the candidacy committee in my area. I hadn't been a member of a Lutheran, I had never dropped my membership at my Lutheran church from 10 years ago, but I hadn't been active in a church, so I went to the pastor at the church down the street and said, one of my requirements is membership in a Lutheran congregation, but I'm planning to go to Holden in a couple of months, so can I join up your church and fill that seminary roster? He said, but as I'm describing it to him, I'm thinking I'm asking this man for an incredible favor. And I'm tearing up as I'm talking to him, just describing the story. I'm talking so fast that I can't even breathe. And I'm apologizing for all this emotion that he's getting stuck with on a Saturday snowy morning in Seattle. And he's going, you know, what this emotion is telling me, but the advice that I usually give people is stay out of the ministry as long as you can, because it's pressure, and it's going to, and people burn out if they go into it with the highly idealistic notion. And what all this emotion is telling me is that you can't stay out anymore. So Holden, I think, will be a good place for you to transition. But yes, we will do anything we can do to facilitate you in the process. And that was like step two in affirmation of a path. And so even though my professional career successes were built on show me the vision and I'll make it happen, what's been happening from December until June was, I just know I'm on the right path. I have no idea exactly what it looks like when it's all said and done. I don't know. Seminary seems like the right idea. Everything's been falling into place with the candidacy committee. It's falling in place here. But I don't know if I'm an ordained pastor in parish. I don't know if I'm a chaplain in a hospice. I don't know if I'm campus minister or village pastor at Holden 15 years from now. That's not really mattering right now. What I know is that when I'm 93 years old and sitting in my porch swing, that it's a life I can look back on that feels right. And for the first time in too many years, that's got to be a sense of call.
Question I've been struggling with the last year or so. I just graduated from seminary. The question that I've been struggling with is it good enough? Is it enough to be good at it and to be using your gifts? Or does it have to be something you want to do? I have received all kinds of affirmations on my internship in a pastoral role there in seminary. My home congregation, my friends have all said, you'd make a great pastor. And I myself feel like, yeah, this is a good match with my gifts. But underneath it all, I'm not sure this is really what I want to do.
Do you feel that way all the time? I mean, is that a feeling you've had since the beginning, or is this
new since you graduated? Or?
No, it's, well, no. It's been a question for actually almost for 2 years now. There's always been kind of an underlying thing of, you know, I think there's probably something out there that I want to do more. Certainly, I get pleasure out of doing ministry and doing things that a pastor does. But I'm just not sure that this is what I really want to do. Yeah. So
that's hard.
I'll take a year off and think about it on staff here.
That'll be hard.
That's another piece along with talent and opportunity. Maybe it's part of the joy thing, and it could be that we're in a little bit of a pendulum swing away from a generation in which if you're going to be miserable doing it, it's clear that God is coming. I really like hot baths and I'm afraid of bugs, so clearly I should be a missionary in the jungle of the Amazon. I don't meet very many people who have that view anymore, although it was once quite prevalent.
Mm-hmm.
But
if it hurts enough.
Yeah.
It's right.
It must be my call. It must be my call, right? Because of that notion that we're called in to share in Christ's work, which is in part suffering. But then what do we do about the other side, you know, about the joy of it?
Yeah, well, I can say that in the past 2 years as I've been going through graduate school, I can tell you, I thought, for much of that time, God, you made it wrong. You know, I did this, and I'm hating it right now. There was no joy. There was no sense of call. It was hard work, making papers in, and it wasn't joy. Music was my joy, but it's not. I mean, the little fire was really low at that point. That little pilot light was almost out a couple times, but. So I mean, I don't know if everybody else. I mean, do you always feel sort of like this is? I always question.
I think my own personal journey I can liken to climbing mountains with a lot of false summits. Maybe on a foggy day, you know, every once in a while, kind of get lost in the snow and the fog, and think, oh my God, where am I? Then you see the top of the hill, and you climb to the top, and think, wow, here's the answer. And you get to the top, and you see the next hill.
I also
good
think
days and bad days.
For me, it's like I tried a lot of things. I felt moved. I was trying to find out something, and so I tried something, and I tried something, and then I gradually was able to say, well, that's not that part of it. Isn't, for example, I was in Lutheran Volunteer Corps, and I did a variety of different things. And each time I was kind of adjusting, you know? But like, I don't think internship, I don't think those experiences give you the sense of being a pastor, or if you're a nurse, being a nurse. And the question for you is, seems to me, I mean, it depends on what kind of person. If you're a person who thinks, and tries to think it all, and sometimes you have to put your foot in, you know? Because you can't experience it when you're thinking, or whether you do need the time to think about it. Sometimes I think it's a matter of trying something on because it's something you think you want to, and because I think God's presence catches you sometimes in surprising ways. And it might say, well, it's not to be a pastor, but this is it.
I've struggled with that question a lot because there were times in my growing up years and there were times in my early 20s when I was just in a total love-hate relationship with the church, for one thing, but really not liking doing those things that I used to love doing. I mean, when I thought about being a pastor when I was younger, when I was 15, 16, whatever, it was with great joy that I thought of standing in front of the congregation and officiating at worship or presiding over the Eucharist or preparing sermons or whatever. And it began to be sort of, gosh, you know, I don't want to do that. And I don't even know yet whether I've come back to end that. I do know that I get more joy out of staying at worship than I used to. But I think I struggle with that same thing as you. Maybe it's sort of the way that we have always looked at call, that if it hurts enough, it must be right. But I do wonder. I think there has to be a piece of it, maybe a part in which we affirm, yes, I get joy out of this. Yes, this is right for me. Because if it's something that we really, basically, in our gut, don't want to do, then there may not be, you know, then there's part of a call, maybe, but maybe we haven't quite heard it. You know, maybe it's toward another direction in theology or something, you know what I mean? I don't know. I don't know if I'm making any sense. It's just wonders. I wonder about that whole wanting to do it thing.
Partly the question we're moving around here is the role of sensation in discerning call. And how much do we rely on our own sensation and our own feeling to discern? And how much do we rely on that also to sustain a sense of calling? And the analogy of hiking is a very good one. That unlike Mark, who does lots on mountains, I've been to Copper Basin once, and it was not, you know, it wasn't because it was all fun at all. It was, I kept looking at his altimeter saying, well, you're almost there, you're almost there, you're almost there. Because I knew I wanted to get where I was going to be once. I wanted to see that. And then I don't need to go back. I've been there. I did it, you know, I proved I could. But the point is that there may be a part of calling which is one foot in front of the other, because you have some assurance that it's the right path. And that's not all joy. At least it's not all jubilation, maybe.
Right.
So I think that question about the role of sensation or emotion or feeling, particularly as Kevin states it, in the context of communal response, and Mark really kind of pointed to that too in an interesting way when he said, my family didn't tell me not to do this. You know, that they didn't say, well, Mark, we are all in our family, we're all pastors and teachers and counselors. What are you doing? What is it you're doing with those wires? So I think I'd be interested to hear what people have to say about the relative weight or the relative loudness of those two different modes of hearing God's voice.
I've been grateful to have people say, you know, you're allowed to do it for a little while and then change. I mean, that's it depends, I think, what kind of person you are. You know, whether you leap quickly or you don't, which one you get stuck on.
Being a second career person myself, before the Holden newsletter came that talked about the long-term positions, I had finished the book about walking across America. A guy who started out in Pennsylvania, Pittsburgh somewhere, and walked all the way to the mouth of the Columbia. Took a year to do it, a couple years to do it, lost his dog, married his wife along the way, conceived the first baby. They stopped off and on and just got the jobs that would extend their resources a little bit further down the road. And I think that was suggestive enough to me that you're gathering experience as you're walking down the road. And that what I've realized about my last 10 years in the professional world is I've been in seminary training for 10 years. Mm-hmm. I've learned how organizations work. I've learned how the people dynamics. I've learned how to listen when it's hard to listen. I've learned how to get things accomplished when the organization isn't necessarily ready. I've learned how to control my patience in those times that are most frustrating. I need to refine that and work on that more. But and so to a certain extent, my calling to go to seminary 12 years ago when I was in college was still a legitimate calling. It was the timing was the issue, and the learning that happened between then. And so, although the flame is burning bright right now, it's not to say the flame wasn't there. I was just accumulating background necessary to, when the time comes, to fulfill the job.
Just a couple observations. You mentioned opportunity before, Deanne, and as you talk about that fellow, that reminds me of how multidimensional our lives are. And this has sort of fallen into a pattern now, perhaps coincidentally, about calling to the office of the ministry. But the multidimensionality of all of our lives and all of our callings is one that I think probably encompasses all of us here, calling within family and calling within multi kinds of opportunities, the wage earning vocation as well as the non-wage earning vocations that we are a part of. And so that word opportunity opens up, I think, multidimensionality. As we try to discern where is God calling us, it is not just into one avenue anymore. And how do we juggle? How do we paint many pastels into, how do we weave into many, whatever metaphor works for you, it seems that as we discern, because we are privileged people, we aren't discerning how will we feed ourselves and those we love today. We are discerning in our luxury on many levels because we have many opportunities. Mm-hmm. And there was another thing about that I wanted to touch on. It escapes me at the moment.
I guess to just kind of tag on to your comment about the multidimensionality of call in general, at any moment for any given person, you know, that we're called into a number of different things, family and church and vocation and whatever. I also wanted to say that it seems like also we're called into various different areas throughout our lives. I mean, I seem to feel the call most strongly towards some form of theological education, but I wouldn't say that I was not called to be a high school math teacher, which I'm doing now, that I was not called to be a full-time stay-at-home mom, which I did for almost 5 years, you know, so I think that it kind of moves into different areas, too. It doesn't have to be one lifetime.
That was the other thing. The other category, I think, that I'm struck with as I hear your story shared is courage. One of the aspects of discernment is the courage it takes to do it. And to ask those brave questions that I think Holden has become a place that allows that. For some of us who only come for brief periods at a time, and for those of you who have come here for longer, it takes a lot of courage to do the things that all of you have described doing and thinking through. And so I think that's another aspect of discernment.
And one, just one example of somebody that's doing something that I think takes courage and is also an example of the multidimensional. A very good friend of mine in Philadelphia, who I prayed for the other day, is a pastor, and she was a pastor in Philadelphia. And her parents are in their 80s, and her mother had a stroke. And she really, every spring, she has felt, oh, I think it's this spring I gotta go out there. And so this year, without a call, and with a family, and with her husband working at one of these excellent church jobs, interfaith peace in the Middle East things that gets paid nothing, they moved back. They chose. That became the focus of what they wanted to decide, you know, what they were going to do next. And they are in the process of moving back to Seattle area. And I think, and that will shape what comes next. That took courage. And I think that's, you know.
And an incredible spiritual mentor for me taught me to take the next peaceful step in discerning and in walking. And something that just brought me a lot of peace as we were talking was the question that, and it tags on to yours as well, and also you, is maybe we're not called to just one thing. Maybe right now you aren't to be in an ordained parish, but maybe down the road you'll be an ordained parish for maybe a couple of years or 5 years, and well, I want to be in a band, or who knows? Who knows what you're going to want to do? But maybe it's not the set thing that we're going to be in called. Is it one call? Is it always a call to? That was always also clarified with ordained ministry, not necessarily. I think some are called to the corporate world. I think there's I hope and pray that God has people there. Ministries, loving people, loving ourselves and community, a tool for that is money, and that is an incredible vehicle for that. So that's what brought me a lot of peace in this big conversation with my questions and what am I going to do and am I called to this or that.
And sometimes it seems like we're called to unknow what we previously knew well.
Oh, yeah.
When I graduated from seminary, people said, you know, what do you want to do? Looks like you're starting with that question. And I said, I don't care, rural, urban, Lord can send us anywhere. My husband's also a pastor. I just know one thing for sure. I will never be a mission developer. Guess what I'm doing now? And after 15 years of ministry, now I'm a mission developer. And pleased to be it.
Yeah.
So I knew, and then it wasn't.
What right, I knew. That was the time.
I unknowed it somewhere.
You know, Mike's comment reminded me of a favorite phrase of my pastor. You said, take the next peaceful step. She says sometimes to me and to others in this sort of a quest situation, take the next indicated action. That's it. You don't have to know where it's going.
You don't, yeah. You
take
don't
the next know. Indicated action.
We're getting near the end of the hour. If there's someone who's waiting for someone else to make your point, they're not going to do it. So this is your chance to say the thing you've been wishing somebody else might say. And then I'd like to say something in conclusion, which is we began by talking about the relationship between the two parts of the summer theme, and to leave us reminded, remembering, that the one vocation we all share is the one that comes to us all in the font. And when we speak of courage, it's, I think, that I'm convinced, it is that we know that our calling to be a child of God is the stable, never-changing one. And it's the forms,
or the arenas in which we live out being a child of God that may shift over time, but that one is never never taken away. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.